We have already spoken of the legacy for man hidden in the South American jungles that is beyond his wildest imagination. In ancient record chambers, scientific knowledge will be found and utilized in the new age. Secrets of a very remote past will be the incentive for magnificent development in a newer world. The cities of the fabulous Amazonian Empire, which antedated other world civilizations, belong to another lost continent but, unlike Atlantis and Mu, this continent is not buried under any ocean, but instead, it is buried behind miles of green hell that constitute the South American jungles. These cities have never been underwater, their records therefore are well preserved in their final resting places in the vast libraries of forgotten Paititi. Countless treasures were brought to Paititi by informed priest scientists when it was known that both Lemuria and Atlantis were definitely doomed to oblivion. What an inheritance will be found in areas where now only the sound of the monkey and the call of the bird are known that combines knowledge of the three greatest empires the world has ever known. Early in June 1957, the expeditionary group of the Abbey, under the direction of the Order of the Red Hand, made its way over difficult trails on foot and horseback to the Marcahuasi Plateau of the Andes, where it encountered a lost sacred forest or garden of the gods high in the Peruvian mountains. This strange place is known by the descendants of the Huanca Indians as the home of the wizards and giant gods. On top of the great plateau there is a large stone fortress in a remarkable state of preservation. This was used by Inca soldiers about AD 1350 when they conquered the Huancas and established military occupation of the entire region. There are many stone chulpas or burial tombs surrounding the fortress, all of which have been robbed. After the murder of the Inca Emperor Atahualpa at Cajamarca, Peru, the Spanish arrived at Marcahuasi and destroyed the ancient mummy bundles to satisfy their lust for the yellow metal. Today, only a few bones remain in each tomb. An ancient burial cave, thousands of feet above a valley, proved to be very important for it contained an unopened tomb that, by some miracle, had not yet been violated. There were countless mummies inside, but the discovery is insignificant when compared with the fantastically ancient sculptured stones of the Marcahuasi Plateau. This plateau is 12,000 feet above sea level, and is shrouded in fog most of the year, but during the months between May and September there is a bright sun and it becomes a delightful place, although very cold at night. The many and great sculptured stones represent an important key to the world's ancient mysteries. Birds and animals from lions and elephants to camels and penguins which never existed in South America have been carved in gigantic proportions. All human races appear to be represented and many great stone heads bear resemblance to those found on famous Easter Island in the Pacific. Many ancient religions are symbolized by beautiful and finely carved sphinxes, faces and figures of forgotten gods and goddesses. The figures are immense and from scientific calculations, it is believed they were made by a race of giant men at least 12 feet tall. It is not yet known for certain whether they belonged to the Cyclopean race or not, but the strange dimensional quality of the carvings is an indication that this may be so. There are many legends that exist among present-day natives in South America. The Incas spoke of the giants, also, that tell of the giant blonde men who once inhabited the continent. These are not ordinary gigantic statues or figures, for when the sunlight, or the moonlight, strikes them at a certain angle, you see things it is impossible to see at any other time. The features change as you view them at different times, under different conditions, and from different angles. Most of the figures have three or four eyes, but no matter where you observe them from, they always seem to present only two. If you are not at a given, fixed point of observation, you do not see the statues as they were intended to be seen. Therefore, we had to locate the elevated platforms near the figures that were used by the makers for observational purposes. The figures are carved out of granite, but are now badly eroded. Yet, they are magnificent in their execution even today, and it takes your breath away to contemplate them and their creators. Who were these giants? Where did they come from? Where did they go to? We will answer such questions through our research at the Abbey. The figures cover an area of several square miles, and reports from other parts of South America indicate that they are to be found elsewhere, although not in such a state of isolation or profusion as at Marcahuasi. There are several altars that were obviously made to be used by giant creatures, but even more startling is the fact that something out of this world seems to be hovering over the plateau. Almost all the time, one can hear a very odd humming sound coming from the figures, and this sound is not due to natural causes. You feel you are dealing with something outside of man's ability to understand at the present time, a look into another dimension of time and space. When one takes a photo of the carved figure of a very old man and observes the negative, it appears not as an old man, but as a young and handsome youth, who could carve stone so that at certain angles shapes will change and cast shadows into valleys, where, as the light changes, strange creatures move as if alive. This race of giant beings used natural objects that seemed to bear resemblance to known animals, and then, by carving them, they enhanced the setting. The result is something that appears to be born right out of the soil. This was a sacred forest where no one ever lived, used as it was exclusively for scientific, religious purposes. Science and religion were then joined together in truth as they will be again in the new age. It is perhaps the last sacred forest that remains nearly intact and unmolested by modern man. It is possible that Marcahuasi was used by the race that later came to be known as Elves. The Fluenca Indians still venerate Hari, who was a Hercules of their legends, a giant. It appears that a memory of the giants persisted to linger in the mythology of the Huancas, and their Hari must have originally been a great leader of the giant race. The Huancas still celebrate strange rituals in hidden areas near the plateau, rituals no white man has ever seen. Until some years ago, the rites were celebrated at Marcahuasi itself. The most startling fact of all disclosed by the Abbey research is that when Peruvian government aerial photos of the plateau are studied carefully, one can see definite, gigantic figures that are visible only from the air. Does this mean that the giants had airships? Were the figures, as seen from the air, markers or symbols of some sort for ships arriving from interstellar space or other nearby planets? Marcahuasi will prove to be an important area for further research in relation to the Cyclopean race and the coming of the Masters from space. During the first part of July 1957, the expeditionary group of the Abbey moved eastwards towards the legendary Paititi. The vast wilderness country east of Cuzco was penetrated in the region of the Rio Alto Madre de Dios. Many difficulties were encountered by the expedition, but great success attended the venture. The usual jungle inhabitants were obvious by their presence in great numbers. Vampire bats, jaguars, tapirs, giant ants, poisonous snakes and other creatures proved to be bothersome, but they did not hinder the progress of the research in the unexplored territory near the headwaters of the Rio Cinquibnia. Kinship with all life was practiced, and this may have had something to do with the fact that the members of the expedition had small difficulty with animals considering the dangers of the area and the fact that no one carried a gun. Hundreds of times dangerous rapids in swift-moving rivers had to be crossed, and all in all, over 200 kilometers were covered through swamps and thick jungle growth that proved to be an almost impenetrable wall as we cut our way through it with machetes. When there were no trails of any kind, we had to walk up the middle of the rivers or use the rock beaches where they existed. We could not possibly enter this unknown land during the rainy season, for then the rivers are very high and anyone on foot could not penetrate any great distance. Our destination the first part of July 1957 was a low group of mountains which are really only the last vestiges of the Andes to the west. It appeared at a distance like a lost world of fiction fame, great green mounds shrouded in fog and mist, a world that impressed us with majesty and mystery. Foot travel was difficult and slow. This may be an unknown land to modern man, but it is a land that was not forgotten by his creator, for it is magnificently beautiful. We came to this area because of the countless legends among South American tribes that somewhere in this vicinity is a great lost stone city of the ancient ones. The Spanish explorer, Juan Alvarez Maldonado, conducted an expedition into the area of the Alto Madariaderos in the 16th century and looked for this same city. However, he never visited the area of our destination, for it is still unknown. A few years ago, a Piro Indian was in the same area looking for his runaway Machiginga Indian wife. In the chain of low mountains near the headwaters of two unknown rivers, he came upon a stone roadway. He followed it to a great city of magnificent stone houses, plazas, and temples. No Inca or Spaniard had ever visited these remains. Why? Because this lost city is only one of many that belonged to the ancient Amazonian Empire of Paititi. In the vicinity where the Piro Indian made his discovery, legends spoke of a strange lost doorway or portal to an antediluvian world. Not really an entranceway, but the stone face of an enormous cliff covered with writings which the tribes said was unknown to them, although they have lived in the area for hundreds upon hundreds of years. On July 10, 1957, we discovered this fabled doorway or rock of the writing in unknown territory on the Rio Sincapnia. We were very near an unknown, wild tribe that had never been visited by civilized men before. They do not desire contact with the outside world, which they have heard about from other visiting Indians. The Abbey will continue its research in this important area and will pass through the village of this tribe in order to attempt to reach the lost stone city. The people of this city carved the figures and hieroglyphics on the rock of the writing. Many drawings and photographs were made that year of the thousands of petroglyphs that are not crude rock carvings made by Stone Age man, but genuine hieroglyphics of a highly advanced and ancient race. The glyphs are in the form of scroll writing of Atlantis and Mu, and are the record of the people of the Lost Stone City. They are related to the world's oldest languages, and they cover an area, on the face of the stone cliff, 85 feet in length and about 8 feet in height. Many appear to be related to Mayan and Aztec glyphs, and there is even an attempt at bas-relief in some carved figures. One figure of a young man in a great helmet shows him pointing to the west. We believe he is pointing in the direction of the lost city, whose priests scientists recorded important historical happenings on the great stone cliff. There are similar city records which are to be found in the temples of Egypt. Three other rocks of writings were located, and these will be studied in the future during other expeditions. The expeditionary group returned down the Rio Sincapnia on a balsa raft they had to build themselves, and completed the rest of the journey by Indian canoe and by foot. The fact that the hieroglyphics are authentic writing is a discovery of major importance in South America, for it is believed that the Incas and pre-Incas had no form of writing whatsoever. At the Abbey, students will continue their research on the glyphs. Besides this discovery, many legends were collected from the little-known Machiginga tribe of the area. These legends speak in detail of the catastrophes that overtook the world during the final destruction of Lemuria and Atlantis. This was, of course, during the time when ancient Tiwanaku was lifted from sea level to the barren heights, and the Andes were born. It was a time when Aramumeru was above the angry sea in his airship heading for South America with the records and the golden sun disk of Mu. Great earthquakes occurred throughout all of the South American continent. Cities like Tiwanaku on the coast were most affected. These coastal centers of population were Lemurian colonial cities, while the lost stone cities farther to the east were much more ancient, belonging to the Amazonian Empire, and had nothing to do with Lemuria's colonization plans. They were located in an area that suffered milder damage, and the buildings were either not ruined, or only partially so. Other legends of the Machiginga tribe speak of the time when their ancestors were in communication with the people of the sky, and the Machiginga language is not a language of savages, and proves that these people have degenerated to their present state due to the destruction of the Amazonian Empire. However, if the cities were not totally destroyed during the catastrophe, why did the natives degenerate? It is believed that the Machigingas and other tribes were not the rulers of the cities, but that they were workers for these people, and that those who governed them were bearded white men. In fact, It is rumored by the jungle tribes today that such white men in long robes still live and carry on research at the capital of Paititi, which is a lost city of 30 citadels, ancient beyond belief when the Incas first came to Peru. The rulers of the Inca Sun Empire searched for this city but never found it. The Spanish conquerors, after Pizarro, braved death in the wilderness to plunder its immense treasure of gold, silver and jewels. They never even so much as once glimpsed its outer courts. It has been held from the eyes of gold-hungry men, for it has a treasure far more valuable than any yellow metal or gem to adorn the neck or arm of a proud and haughty daughter of the world. In the towers of the lost cities there is a blazing crystal of white light that shines eternally. This, undoubtedly, is the Maxine light of the ancients, and it is connected with the same power that is utilized today by the visitors from space in the UFOs. Many spacecraft are being reported by the missionaries in the interior of South America, and the Space Confederation has a gigantic base there near the remains of the lost cities that existed in magnificence in a time when their ancestors from space landed there and established communication with the priests, scientists of the cities. Masters from space sat in great conclaves with masters of Earth, for was it not a time when men conversed with the gods? In our generation, the interplanetary visitors have returned to visit the cities once again. Master teachers of the world's inner retreats, in cooperation with the hierarchy of the Great White Brotherhood, are now in communication with the arriving masters from space, just as they were during the time of Paititi's glory ages ago. Because of the rumors of the white teachers in robes appearing in the jungle even today, it is likely many of the lost cities serve as a focus of wisdom. Dear student of light, can you grasp the vision that the celestial hierarchy wants us to know? Can you see the future where spacemen and space teachers mingle with earthmen and earth teachers to guide the remnant that remains? As catastrophes caused the arcane knowledge to be hidden, now they will also cause the same knowledge to be revealed once again to spiritually hungry man. But fear not these changes in the world. Follow the words of the Master Kirpal Singh Ji Maharaj of Delhi, a living saint still clothed in a physical form. There is no need to worry. Each of the initiates should learn to rise above the body consciousness by regular practices and meditation. No sting of death will be felt. You should do nothing but take sensible precautions, if at all necessary, and devote time regularly in meditation and leave everything else to the Master Power which is overhead each of the initiates and which is extending all feasible help and protection. Efforts are being made to check the impending catastrophe in higher circles. Master Power is overhead the initiates and they need not be afraid. There are students of light now working and serving in the new world focus of illumination where the feminine aspect of the permanent ray enters the earth. They trod the trails of the mountains and the valleys, and they walk where there are no trails. They know the rivers and lakes, the glaciers and deserts. They are tireless as those servants of old, yet they have a modern mission in that they must teach a new world. They must present the true ancient world to the present so that the future world now appearing as a golden sun on the horizon of our day may inherit its divine legacy. These, then, are the brothers of the seven rays essence of the Andes. Excerpt from Secret of the Andes. https://www.unaryunwisdom.com/brotherhood-of-the-seven-rays-lemurius-lash